So I will begin this podcast by asking Matthew, are you going to be okay?
What podcast? What are
you doing? Go, you gotta keep it together. Keep it together, man. You got me. I'm saying this one more time. You have to be professional. I can't be talking to no one.
Which technically is true. You hear me in your head. But yeah, I just came back from Lille in France. I'm in Amsterdam, so I'm a bit tired for this episode. So if at some point I sound like exhausted, it's not because I'm exhausted by my partner.
You're not tired of
it's
me.
Exactly. It's not you. It's me. It's a real case of it's not you, it's the fucking train. And then coming back at like getting up at like 8 to take a train at 9 and then just rushing through the day. But here we are.
Yeah.
To talk about films.
Yeah, and films being plural. That's why I'm like, this is going to be a big one, because we're not talking about just one film like we normally do, not even two films, but three. And you're like, dude, three films. To be fair, they are related, you know. It's a trilogy, just a bit.
Well, because we talked about like one film and then its follow up in our first and second episodes, but like in this case, they're truly related. They didn't just put a one and two just for the fun, you know, like it's actually the same actor, and he's definitely going for a specific direction.
Yeah. So I will introduce myself. My name is Wing Ho Lin. I am one of the two hosts of Hong Gore. Welcome. And Matthew, if you introduce
yes,
yourself.
Yes, that's Matthew. That's my name. I also was part of this podcast. And I'm here to talk about Jackie Chan and the Police Story franchise. If there's no background music at this point, saying like, make it like emphasis is imagine it, just picture it.
Just imagine Jackie Chan singing in the theme tune.
Exactly.
Like any of the theme tunes.
Yeah, he can probably do that. He can do a lot of things. He was in the Ninja Turtle movie recently. He never ends.
Oh, God, yeah, he played Splinter.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
He played Splinter. And learns. It's not really a spoiler if you haven't seen the Turtle movie, which is great. I highly recommend it. But
yeah,
it is great because at the beginning, the way they do the origin story is that Splinter actually learned martial art not by being like witnessing his master train himself, but actually just watching action movies. And he watches action movies. He watches a lot of martial art movies. And
some of these films are Jackie Chan.
There's Jackie Chan in some of those. I was like, yeah, but you have to. He's doing the voice, so you have to. And he's great. He's very, very good. Like this.
I heard a lot of good things about him. I actually wanted to catch it because it was National Cinema Day, like I think a couple of weeks ago. So National Cinema Day is where a portion of cinemas in the UK will only charge £3 a showing. And I wanted to go see it, but I had like a workshop to go to. And then afterwards, I mean, I think it ended at 5. And I think the last showing of the Turtles films was like 5 o'clock at my local cinema. So it was kind of hard. Yeah. But I did end up seeing a film. I seen the Barbie film, which I enjoyed very much.
Yes, it's pretty great. Fun fact, France also has a National Cinema Day, except instead of £3, it's just €1.
What?
Yes.
Oh, God. It's UK still the most expensive place to live around.
Even the stuff that's supposed to be cheaper is like, oh, yeah, well, it's not that cheaper anyway.
But I will be catching the Mutant Ninja Turtles film really soon.
Even the soundtrack is great.
Because it looks great.
Yeah, even the soundtrack is great. Reznor and Atticus Ross did a good job.
Yeah, who did it again? Did you say RZA?
Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. So Nine Inch Nails.
Doing this.
It's probably a very unexpected turn in his career, going like, well, yeah, I used to be the goth guy and like. And now I'm like doing the Ninja Turtles movie, but he's doing a great job. Like, but he did Soul also before that. Like his previous soundtrack was a Soul for Pixar, so he does tons of stuff.
Really?
Yeah, he did it with Jean-Baptiste, the guy who leads the band for Stephen Colbert on The Late Show.
Oh wow, amazing.
Like he's a guy that works with plenty of people, and there's tons of really good soundtrack from Reznor, like, and they don't necessarily sound too Nine Inch Nails-ish.
I was gonna say, what is the soundtrack like? Because I always associate the niche. I honestly, the only reason I say this is because I've been playing Shredder's Revenge a lot recently, and really that has more of a game. Yeah, a really solid game. I really, really like the sprite work, but the soundtrack's very, it's very hip hop, 90s hip hop.
Yeah,
type
for sure. They do put,
and I wonder,
they do put some 90s hip hop in there. Like you have, I can't remember what else you got, but I strongly remember the fact that they use "Shimmy Shimmy Yo" by Oldie Bastard in one of the songs, which is hilarious to me because it fits in with that ongoing problems, well, problem in quotation mark, but that Hollywood has to put rap songs with lyrics that are incredibly inappropriate for the audience the movie is directed to. Love this, the Shimmy Shimmy Yo, but it does start with all those bastards singing, "Oh baby, I like it raw. Okay. Oh baby, I like it raw."
Okay.
And then it's that Ninja Turtles movie for kids when they are having fun at an arcade. And it's like, I mean, it's a great song. It's perfect for the setting, like, no problem. But you have to forget that All Dirty Bastard is basically talking about sex without having a condom. Like, straight at the beginning. And it's quite explicit. Like, it's not like, oh, but you mean something else. Like, well, yeah, I guess he likes raw hip hop. I guess you could also say that, but I'm pretty sure he meant something else. So, it's quite funny.
I mean, they should have got... I'm surprised they didn't get, like, Ghostface Killer in it, because the tune he made for the game was actually... I don't know, I can't remember. I remember looking at the lyrics, and I remember being like, oh, this is quite... He adapted himself well, appropriate audience.
Yeah, he's good. He's a solid MC, this guy. But not at all. That's the thing. He didn't try. I think that would have been massively awkward for Trent Reznor to try to do that, because although there are like some syncopated rhythm in Nine Inch Nails songs, like he's definitely not a rap producer, and he did work with some rap producers. Like he did one song with LP, the song "Flyontology" on the "I'll Sleep When You're Dead" album, but. Again, like that's him just servicing a rap producer, so he's not at all that kind of guy. And the soundtrack sounds a lot more kind of digital-ish. There's some kind of 8-bit sounding moments, but like not too obvious. So like there's some kind of callback.
Is it kind of a? Is it like a video game?
Sort of, yeah. There's a bit. Kind of like that, but it's a really, really good soundtrack and some really emotional pieces. Like the stuff that sounds the most like Nine Inch Nails are the songs. Like there's one song that's really, really beautiful, which has a really funny title of like something like "Just Like Mark Ruffalo," and it's because they do a reference to the Avengers at some point. And it's full of. I mean, it's kids. Like the turtles in it are kids, so they just make pop culture reference.
Yeah, they're actually. It's funny, they're actually teenagers.
Exactly, yeah. And the actors are all teenagers. Like, they didn't pick, like, big known movie star. They just picked, like, four really good teenagers who have a fantastic energy and recorded all four together, I think, for some scenes. Or maybe everything.
Yeah,
so that's a good dynamic.
I think, because I think it's separate. Normally, when they do voiceover animations, they tend to like do them in isolation.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I think during lockdown, I think there were a couple of voice actors who just basically recorded their voices while at home because they have their own inbuilt studio. And I think Seth Rogen was like, because he does have a lot of his sort of back and forth involves
improv.
Being in person. So exactly, in person and improv. So he was very adamant to have the four actors be in the same room so they can actually bounce off of each other.
And you can see that. You can feel it throughout the movie. It's quite good. So it was a very, very good idea and everybody's really strong in it. But coming back to the soundtrack, there's that song, so something like Mark Ruffalo, which has the kind of like moody piano pieces that Nine Inch Nails has in some songs.
Oh, okay.
Like at the end of The Perfect Drug or like throughout the album The Fragile. There's stuff like that. And those are like La Mer, for example, which is a really beautiful song. And there's some tracks that are like that. But But otherwise, it's quite like, you know, ambient electronic stuff. And
okay,
I really love it. I honestly found it, before seeing the movie, I was already listening to soundtracks. I really love Reznor. So I was like, oh, this is good, but like, I'm sure it's going to be in the background. And, you know, you won't be able to hear it that much. And then throughout the movie, I was like, oh, I recognize that song, I recognize that song, I recognize that song. And I think I love it even more now. So
it's
a really good soundtrack and a really good movie. Everything works perfectly fine. And then, yeah, in between you have, like, rap songs, like 90s rap songs, which is, I mean, people who are producing movies nowadays are people who live through that era. So even, like, although the latest Transformers movie is set in 1994, so they also have a good excuse to put like a lot of boom bap in there.
Yeah,
it's still like kind of like, oh, like considering who's producing this, like I'm sure I know why there's a lot of like those kind of songs in there, because that's 40-year-olds like me just like.
I was gonna say, you know, we now reach the point where we kind of like our parents are like, oh, I remember this song back in the day.
Yeah, back in the days, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, shit.
Yeah, it's funny to think, like, watching those kids' movies going like, yeah, like, down with the kids, like, putting, like, Return to the 36 Chambers by the T Bastards. Like,
yeah,
sure, that's what the kids like. But no, it's a really, really good movie. So Jackie Chan is doing the voice of Splinter and does a fantastic job in it. But that's Jackie Chan for you. He has many problems as a person, but as a professional, it's kind of difficult to find fault with him.
Yeah, let's just focus him on his film career as a creator and not anything else.
Never look into Jackie Chan's family history. Like, he's a terrible father. Like, it's not even funny. Yeah, like, it's really
I'm not.
Bad.
Yeah, we're laughing, but it's kind of like it's like
it's so bad. It's so bad. You have to look at it and go, oh, okay, I'm gotta keep them separated, just like the Offspring used to say before. Completely different topic, but you gotta keep them separated. Yeah. Jackie Chan, the actor, producer, Jackie Chan, the human being.
The human being. Like, indeed. Yeah,
whatever he has to care to with two others, it's like, oh. Okay.
You know, you speak just like a genuine Hong Kong person because they do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, we do. We still like Police Story and all that stuff. So,
but yeah, he's a prick.
So, which segues well to our main topic because...
Terrible parenting. You know,
yeah, sure. You know, terrible parents.
No,
in the
it's not terrible. But there is one element that in those movies, Jackie Chan is terrible at is being terrible with women in general. But we'll talk about that probably at last, because there's other topics. Yeah. It's not the most prominent problem you can have with this movie. Although there's a lot of things good in this movie, like a lot of
this film, you know, basically, this is where my obsession with Maggie Cheung began. So I don't know about that.
She's great. No problem with that. So Jackie Chan, it's his biggest franchise aside from the Rush Hours movie. Funny thing, actually, when I started looking up some stuff on IMDb for this movie, I was looking at Jackie Chan's profile, and at the top, like, the four movies he's mostly known for. Well, the one that shows us at the top is actually not Rush Hour, but it's Who Am I?
Who Am I?
Yeah, Who Am I?
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. It's I was really surprised. It's like, wait, people...
Yeah, I'm kind of... Hang on, that's the film that he's most known... I mean, I've seen it, and it's an entertaining film. I don't know if he's, like, the most well-known for...
I don't know, I don't really know how IMDb sorts maybe out to those top movies.
Maybe to, like... I mean, maybe to Western audiences.
That's
kind of
what I think. And it's IMDb, it's an American website, too, so...
Because I think, for me, I think Police Story is... his most iconic franchise, like he's most synonymous. You know, that and Drunken Master, I would say, are his two of the most iconic franchises.
Yeah.
But maybe Police Story more so because he has more of a creative stamp on that one. So yeah, and there's been a bunch of them, but on this podcast, we're just going to talk about the first three because arguably they're the best of the bunch. You know, kind of.
Funny thing though, the third movie is actually called Super Cop in some, for some audience. And then when they moved out, like after the one following Super Cop is Super Cop 2, which stars Michelle Yeoh. So
yeah, that, well, that, that was cool. So that that's actually essentially a spin-off. So this is kind of a weird one, and I think a lot of it has to do with Miramax releasing it overseas. Right. So when Police Story 3 came out, it had an arrangement with Miramax to be released overseas, but because the first two films wasn't like, it was only well known in like a small audience. Yeah. It wasn't, and you know, it wasn't like, and they were trying to sell Jackie Chan to a much wider audience. But if they're going to put the Police Story 3 at the end of it, they'll be like, well, what about the first two films? So they basically they just took the subtitle of that film and just made it the main title, which is Super Cop. And then when that film became a big success, Michelle Yeoh's character got so popular, that character got her own film called Project S.
Right.
And then when that was released in the US, they just basically dubbed that as Super Cop 2, okay, as a sort of a sequel to the for Super Cop, which is Police Story 3. Confusing, but
is there another movie called Super Cop with Jackie Chan? Because there's one thing I remember fondly from Hot Fuzz. Is that you have a scene where they are in the supermarket, you know, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost are in the supermarket, and they're looking at, like, Nick Frost is looking at DVDs, and then he's holding this DVD of Jackie Chan.
I
remember that line, and I thought it was about Super Cop, it was about Police Story 3. But when I look at the picture, I was like, wait, that movie looks like completely different. Like, this is just Jackie Chan like throwing himself on a rope, like on a rope.
So I think that is actually Police Story. That is Police Story 3. But I think it's kind of like, okay, so this is like back in the day. This is like the 2000s, where the Hong Kong cinema on DVD was getting a lot more. It was a lot more common in terms of circulation, but some of its front covers are kind of like Photoshop rubbish, you know. So they basically picked any random Jackie Chan image and just stuck it on like
I thought it might be that, but it could have been something different, and they just slapped
No.
So the tagline is indeed true. Super Cop.
Meet the cop. That can't be stopped. You know what? When I first saw that in the cinema, I'm not gonna lie, I kind of fanboyed out. I was like, yeah, because it's an acknowledgement of that time.
And the delivery is fantastic. So
exactly.
because
the character Nick Frost is he's essentially a film fan in that.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
Of course, he's gonna like. So yeah, but no.
Which one was you first? Out. Bad Boys 2 or Point Break? What do you mean? Which one would prefer? No, which one are you gonna watch first?
We're gonna watch both. Action double bills. That's my night. You know, that's my ideal night.
And Hot Fuzz is probably one of the best action movies the UK has ever made. So,
I mean, competition's not high. So, but you're right.
It's very
it's still great. It's very great. Good.
I think it's up there with Kung Fu Hustle. I think. In a different way.
Interesting.
I mean, in the sense that it's a perfect mix of action and comedy.
Yeah, and comedy. Yeah, you're right. Actually.
Kung Fu Hustle has an amazing scene. Like, in terms of cinematography, I think I would rate Kung Fu Hustle probably higher, like, in terms of all the work that comes into it. But if you're asking me, like, if you want to watch those two movies, like, which one you're having the most fun with, I'm like, I'm going to have a very hard time deciding which of the two.
Yeah, can we watch both of them?
Yeah, exactly. You know? That's a perfect double bill. Kung Fu Hustle and Hot Fuzz. Easy.
I do remember
which actually brings us back to Jackie Chan, because so he came in the scene in the 70s on the back of Bruce Lee, and then when Bruce Lee passed away, he was one of those guys that was part of the Bruce Lee exploitation, and he actually shot a follow-up to Fist of Fury in 1976 where he was taking over the role of Bruce Lee, but he definitely wasn't his thing. And he only came into his own in the 1980s when he moved to Golden Harvest. So the production company...
1980s, late 70s kind of era. So, yeah, because his big break was Snake in the Eagle Shadow with... It wasn't Golden Harvest. It was actually Seasonal Films first by Im Sing Yuen. And he did Snake in the Eagle Shadow, which was a big success. And then he did Drunken Master, which was an even bigger success and became kind of his, like...
Iconic.
That's what kind of cemented him as like an icon at that point. And it was, I think he did one more film, but as a director debut, which is Fearless Hyena. And then afterwards, he did Young Master, which was his first film, Golden Harvest. And then from that point on, he maintained like a strong relationship with Golden Harvest throughout the 80s.
Yeah. And I think he's probably one of the guys that saved the industry after Bruce Lee's death, because you probably, there was a vacuum there, and the industry probably needed somebody very, very strong to lead the way.
Well, they needed a strong action guy. I mean, there was no one could actually fit up Bruce Lee's shoes, quite rightly so.
Exactly.
So, yeah, but in terms of action, I think, yeah, you're right. There isn't any. I think they were doing fine enough, because they were in between Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan. Hong Kong comedies was actually the main selling point towards Hong Kong audiences. And in fact, there was the Hoi brothers with Sam Hoi and Michael Hoi and all that. And there was a third one. I've got the name. But they were the only ones that kind of like kept Hong Kong cinema alive, because they weren't action people per se, but they were like selling a specific type of Hong Kong type comedy, which worked well with the audience at the time. But in terms of an action star, there was definitely a vacuum, which Jackie Chan clearly filled up, you know, with together with Sammo Hung, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And action and comedy in terms of physicality go well, and you go hand in hand. Like Jackie Chan being particularly influenced by a lot of physical comedy, like Charlie Chaplin is always referenced when it comes to
Buster Keaton.
Yeah, Buster Keaton took a lot of risk back in the days. Like you see a lot of those stunts and you think like, wait, like there's no CGI at all. Like it's really, the building just fell on him and he had to stand there.
I took another film called The General. It still holds up even to this day. You know, it's such a great film, especially with the trend. I mean, you can clearly see there was a lot of money put into it, but the physicality he had to perform.
And I always heard that Jackie Chan was influenced by Jean-Paul Belmondo in France, because Belmondo I mean it's probably a thing that was maybe put on by French media, and maybe Jackie Chan was playing to the French media and saying I really like Belmondo. But in interview it came up very often that Jean-Paul Belmondo was kind of influenced, because Belmondo also did his own stunt, and as an action guy he was always pushing for doing his own stunt, and like he also took a lot of risk. That's what I always heard, but I kind of wondered, and your reaction proves it, that it was maybe a French thing that was catered to a French audience. To say, like, I'm kind of like that guy that you know and love so much, so, like make movies. Just...
I'd be interested to look into that, because this is the first I've heard of it, definitely. So, yeah.
For me, it's something I've always heard kind of in the background. But, again... Probably because, regardless of the influence or not, you can draw parallel between the two, because they both did their own stunts. Like, there's many, many differences after that. They're completely different people. But there's just that element that is similar. But we were talking about Kung Fu Hustle, and definitely Jackie Chan is the guy that you can give credit for making sure Stephen Chow had a career. Like, I'm sure Stephen Chow looked at Jackie Chan movies and were like, yes, that's the stuff I want to do.
Stephen Chow is definitely a fan of like the Kung Fu cinema, particularly Bruce Lee, actually. He definitely quite tries to incorporate it in his films, but Stephen Chow's humor is very...
it's less physical.
Different. It's not just physical, but I think it's also verbal.
Yeah.
It's less physical. It's more verbal, and it's a lot more... It's very... I would say adult-orientated in a sense that...
There's a lot more sex jokes. There may be a lot more that kind of humor, which Jackie Chan doesn't really do at all. Like, his character is almost asexual in a way. Like, just like some cuckoo in Dragon Ball Z. Like, they're like, girls. They're like, sure, I'm dating one, but like, I don't even know what I'm doing. Like, I'm confused when people look at my body and think like, oh, he's sexy. It's like, wait, what? I'm just buff because I train for action. Like, that's all I want to do.
Yeah.
Action, 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 action! So, that's all. Yeah, so he's very unconcerned by all those matters. And all he does is slapstick comedy, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. He's basically the everyman who does extraordinary things. Yeah, absolutely. Kind of thing.
He has a fantastic face for that because he does look like an everyman. It's like, oh well, yeah, this is nobody, and then you look at the rest of the body, you're like,
He's like, not to take away from like Jackie, but I think that's his like main appeal in that exactly. he's not posited as like essentially an Andy Lau where he's just obscenely attractive.
Yen, who are like incredibly charismatic and also extremely good looking man. But he also like because of like maybe his less threatening like demeanor, like putting him in the Rush Hour movie was perfect because like he really worked very well in those movies. Not that I enjoyed them, but like they did gangbusters for a reason. It's perfect for an American audience. It was just exactly what probably the American audience needed. But I would say that take aside the comedy and focus on the action style, I'd say that Boys Story is probably, if you need to introduce someone to Hong Kong action movies and they've never ever seen a Hong Kong action movie, you can easily go with Boys Story and they'll feel right at home if they lived through the 80s. Like, there's not a lot of problem with this movie. Dare we say it's a perfect movie?
I would go as far as say it's definitely one of the most perfect action films that you can. It's the most pure in terms of like action when action film goes, which I think.
And there's a reason for that because you talked about it before the episode.
So it was interesting how Police Story sort of came about is interesting in terms, and this was probably indicative of Jackie Chan's process. But what happened was is that Jackie Chan had some ideas of what type of action he wanted. Device. So he, you know, he was like, okay, I want a shootout that will end with a car chase at the end at the rural areas of like Hong Kong, and then you know, a fight in the mall, a fight in like the streets, you know, with multiple opponents. And once he figured out those action scenes, he would then actually go to his script writers and basically just task them to say, okay, these are the four action sequences I want to like create. Build a narrative around it, you know, kind of thing. So it works, you know. Normally, I guess it's safe to say that in Hollywood, they first build the story and then figure out the action afterwards. Whereas he basically kind of did the opposite. And I'm really surprised how coherent the film is.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, it's like, and it does have like stakes, and the stakes does actually get higher. So, And they managed to, you know, the action managed to come out organically as something where in other, let's say, not so well thought out action films, the story and the character stops and to actually make way for an action scene, you know.
And
whereas, no, go on.
And no, I just want to say, I think the reason is that it's a movie that's set in Hong Kong and there's a brilliant use of the city. The movie starting with that just journey down the hill. Like the slums, and then you finish at the mall, for example, like those kind of like that trajectory. It's really, really well thought out throughout the whole movie because it's set in Hong Kong and they really take advantage of the city. They don't try
and the location. It's almost very. I mean, given the budget, because the budget apparently turned out to be just under 2 million Hong Kong dollars, which is, no, 2 million US dollars, which is like peanuts.
Hong Kong dollars, that's probably even less.
Nothing, even less, exactly. But still, it was peanuts. But if you look at the film, and I think I value it a lot more than maybe perhaps much earlier, because Hong Kong has changed so much in terms of its locale and like the sort of like the architecture that look in those films now, it has become a historical document of like what 100%. Hong Kong was, you know, back in the 80s.
It's actually one of the reasons what I'm thinking nowadays, like, do I want to visit Hong Kong? Because I've never visited Hong Kong. And there's a part of me that goes like, is there a reason for me to visit Hong Kong? Because like the Hong Kong I love doesn't exist anymore. And
you know what, you're not the only one that actually.
Yeah, that's kind of like I'd like to, but then yeah, there's other like political elements that are worrying about visiting the city. But if you put that aside, which we can't really, because the reason the city doesn't exist like it is because, you know, the political landscapes. Yeah, exactly. The political landscape completely changed. Like Paris in like Belmondo movie looks kind of similar to Paris nowadays. But then there's something that didn't change as much for some reason. So like the Hong Kong that you see in those movies, like you said, it's a perfect historical document, and it takes advantage so much of the city and what it was for its worst and its best. Then you just look at it and go like, this is incredible. And yeah, the choreography is amazing.
Yeah, the fight choreography was, this is one of those films that he definitely was developing, Jackie Chan being, I'm talking about, continued developing his trademark fight choreography style. And there's two elements to this. One is the fact, the genre he's working with, which is essentially a police action thriller. And normally in that genre, you don't see a lot of, I think they were contemporary action films or action films that were set in contemporary time at the, you know, of the 80s. But they were kind of few and far between. And if you were to do like a cop action thriller, you know, you have to like sort of posit the question, like, well, why would anyone utilize martial arts or like fisticuffs where you have
guns,
where you're in a setting? Well, yeah, exactly. We have guns. So, you know, you constantly have to like sort of, I guess, create ingenious ways to sort of get rid of the guns, be it, you know, you run out of bullets or you're in a room that's full of like, you know, gas, so if you pull if you pull the trigger, things will explode, so you're gonna like rely on fisticuffs. You know, it's any of those sort of like scenarios. And I think Jackie Chan was one of the first of that era that decided, okay, let's make a police action film but with martial arts. I definitely think, I don't know if he was the first, because Yes Madam, which is also a police action thriller with fight films, came out 2 months earlier than Police Story,
right? But
I think they were like
similar ideas,
they were made similar idea, and I think they were made, they were in production pretty much at the same time. So I wonder if that, you know, if there were like communication between the two, you know, I don't know. But
it's really interesting, because I always think of the fact that, for example, cell phone exists, like changed completely, like, or like a lot of like cop dramas or like murder investigation. Yeah. Like from the moment you have a cell phone, like there's so much more that goes out of the window. And I never considered the fact that, guns make it that those action movies with you have fight scenes, physical fight scenes, don't make much sense, because in Police Story, it makes complete sense. Like,
the
physicality comes to, for me, the fact that he's a cop with a, like, he doesn't want to kill, even though it's never really explained, he's really got a code, and that kind of makes him sympathetic. That's one
But
reason.
Also, you know, I think you also have to understand that at this point, I think Jackie Chan wanted to provide a positive role model, especially a positive role model for the police.
Right.
Because if he as a character, as a cop, starts shooting out and not really giving
a chance,
basically the public a chance to sort of, you know, basically start, you know. Hang on, let me rephrase that. If he as a character starts shooting up a storm in a public area with like pedestrians, that's not a good look for the police, basically. So he's very careful of actually trying to provide a positive image of the Hong Kong police, as well as his own persona.
Absolutely. I think there's actually maybe a whole dissertation that maybe already exists about Hong Kong, not Hong Kong, but like Jackie Chan and his portrayal of authority. Like, there's a whole thing, like, throughout his movies, he's always very concerned making sure authority of maybe any kind is kind of portrayed very positively. There's only one of his movies where, I think it's the Chinja Coincidence, or the one where he's leading a gang, like, because he's in Japan and he's part of...
Oh, Shinjuku Incident.
Yeah, exactly, it's the Chinja Coincidence. Yeah. And that's probably the only time where you see Jackie Chan playing a character where he's like, oh, yeah, authority is not that great. There's discrimination. Would you believe that? And it's like
the real world.
It's incredible. Like, never even believe that. But that's the only occasion where that probably happens in this filmography. The rest of the time is very, very much pro-authority, pro-police, and it fits right in, probably in the transitional post-Hong Kong and then just like mainland China, which isn't as a theme of the film series, like in Police Story 3. But it's really, really striking how much, the fact that he makes those fisticuff scenes work perfectly well because his ethic is the way he looks at the role of police in such a positive manner.
Like, if you think about it, the final showdown in Police Story, like, you know, I'm kind of surprised. Think about it. I'm kind of surprised that the villains didn't pull out a gun, given like in the opening sequence where everyone is shooting up the storm, and progressively it was like, oh, there's no guns, you know, kind of thing.
I think it kind of goes too fast. That's also the reason why I think the guns don't work against Jackie Chan, is that the scenes are portrayed in a way and choreographed in a way where he moves so fast that you don't have the time to actually aim and shoot something. So they try to throw everything at him. The bike is thrown against him, like an incredible bike scene at the end of Police Story 1. But like anything else as well, which is why actually Police Story 2 goes into the, you know, bomber direction, because that makes sense.
It's sort of like weird terrorists
works less as a Police Story movie. But just to, the theme for me for Police Story movies is that they revolve around sort of fisticuff, like crime stories with fist fights.
Yeah.
The mix of seriousness, because all the threats are extremely real in all of those movies.
Yeah.
Like it's weird that they always involve only Jackie Chan saving the day when you consider the size of the threats for each movie. But you still have comedy in it. And then explosions. So they are like kind of perfect blockbuster movies in the modern sense of the word, because you have the slapstick elements, the funny comedy mixed in between the fist fights that are extremely well choreographed. And then you have the big explosions. There's some explosions in the first one, a lot more in the second, and the third goes all out.
I think that a lot of that has to do with a change in director, because the first two films were directed by Jackie Chan, and the third film was directed by Jackie Chan gave the directing reins to another director called Stanley Tong. He was a former stuntman himself, so he knows what he's actually doing. But going back to the first film, the first Police Story film, another aspect that Jackie Chan wanted to sort of like introduce, not only in terms of the genre, was also the style of action.
Yeah.
Now, prior to this, he has experimented with the action, with like the likes of like Dragon Lord and even Project A. Project A, I have a real fondness with, in that if you look at the action scenes in those, they look more like scrappy brawls as opposed to like long protracted, clean martial art fight sequences.
Project A, isn't that the movie he made when he came back from the US or something? Because he tried making a dent in the US market.
Yeah, he did.
So badly, it was like, fuck this shit.
He did a Battle Creek Brawl, which I don't know if he was treated badly or not as bad as when I think he was more dissatisfied with the Protector when he went back the second time. But he went back the first time for Battle Creek Brawl and it didn't work out, even though I think it was one film that actually did look at Jackie Chan's persona and sort of like worked with that, as opposed to try to make him a Bruce Lee type character. He came back and did Project A, which was like a pirate film. And he was already experimenting with different how to stand out from the other crop of like action directors, particularly compared to the likes of, let's say, Sammo Hung and Yuen Woo Ping.
Yeah.
Because and compared to those guys, traditionally, if you look at those action scenes, you tend to like have a hero who, you know, for the most part fights multiple opponents, but for the final reel, the hero fights like a supervillain, like a final boss in like a video game, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and they tend to be like, they tend to be like super kickers, because that's how you generally show how, okay, well, how do you actually posit a villain who is an exemplary martial artist that will prove a challenge for the hero.
Just like in Stuck on Doors or like in Yes Madam, they're all like,
exactly,
in Yes Madam, there's like, oh, there's two super kickers. Well, we are two heroines.
Exactly.
Oh, what a coincidence.
Same deal. And it's funny, Yes Madam and Eastern Court, Yes Madam definitely follows the sort of like the more Sammo Hung sort of like traditional of like fight.
And he's a producer on Yes Madam, so that makes sense.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. With Police Story, Jackie Chan, he has, you know, fought like, you know, rock hard opponents, but I think for Police Story, he wanted to do something.
You just said rock hard opponents, like rock hard, like. That's it.
Yeah, no, you know, like, you know what,
you know, I know, like, what you actually, mean. Like, I know what you mean.
You know, yeah,
you can't
on.
Stop anyway. Me from making sex jokes. You won't take away my
You're right, I can't. I just have to like facepalm every time I hear myself say rock hard. Anyway, the point is, you know, he fights. For Police Story, he actually tries to utilize choreography where he fights multiple opponents. And even in the final reel, it's all about the danger is how he's actually trying to overcome the hurdle of like multiple attackers coming at him from left or right.
Left or right.
Exactly.
Like, that's what makes this, like, it's one of those scenes, like, there's many action scenes on YouTube, but it's definitely one of those scenes that you can go ahead if you've never seen the movie. I mean, if you've never seen the movie, go watch the entire movie. But if you want to get your mind blown, just watch this scene and like stay from your screen.
So much broken glass. Oh, in fact,
incredible.
Yeah, I think that's what the final reel of Police Story is known for, is that it's so many sugar glass, which is like basically stunt glass for like people to actually be thrown through.
I have a question for you, because I always heard, or at least I had heard once, that for all Police Story movies, they then added up, like, the first one has that sugar glass, but then the second one has stronger glass, and then the third one's got even stronger glass, or like real glass. Is that something you'd heard of, or like absolutely?
That's not something I heard of. I think what happened was, I think maybe I had something, a story about the glass that they actually used for the first film specifically. So they were meant to use another piece of glass, but they found that it shattered too easily because it was like, it looked like it just collapsed with like just a touch. So they had to get like sugar glass, which is not as dense as normal glass, but more denser than the stuff they were actually using. Yeah. And there was actually a shot where Bridget Lin gets pushed through like a glass sort of display by Feng Han.
Yes, exactly what she was.
And
she was talking about.
She looked like she was in pain. And I think that was genuine, you know?
Yeah.
And in fact, there was a scene, there's also a shot where Jackie Chan or Gaikui actually smashes his head through a glass, and the glass actually breaks in like a perfect circle. And I think there was an outtake where he was like, that really hurt.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those movies like where the final reel of just like, hey, look at Jackie Chan breaking his limbs and all the times where he almost died is really striking, because there's a few occasions when you think like, oh, that must have hurt, as in I don't even know how you're still alive.
That's
sliding down where they show that three times because it's like,
yeah, they freeze out, and you know what, all those light bulbs not even powered by a battery, so those light bulbs were meant to be powered by like a battery, sort of like their own battery, but the battery trying to light up all those light bulbs in that huge building, it was just not enough, so they had to like rely on just the power on the actual building, which means more electricity, which means he could have got like, he could have died through electric shocks.
That's,
you know,
one of the trademark of Jackie Chan, like it's very visible in those Police Story movies, is how much danger he puts himself in. I think in Police Story 3 it's even worse. Like, there's like the moment where he's hanging from the helicopter at the end. It's like, oh, okay, like that's, I don't know who, you know, have you heard about Tom Cruise? Like, it made the rounds recently, like, where apparently like, you know, he has like the, he asked an expert like, how can I do this scene? And the person was like, well, you can't because you're gonna die. And the guy was like, okay, well, so I changed professionals. Like, I'm talking to somebody else. And Jackie Chan, I don't even know if he's talking to anyone. I think he's doing this thing.
I don't think he's actually talking to anyone. I mean, he's very much in charge of that crew. Yeah. He's not only the director, the actor, but he was also one of the producers. So he gets a lot of say on what
and it's his crew, and his own do. Production
it's
company.
His own production company and his stunt team. So he definitely, he's doing it under his own volition. You know, he's not getting advice from anyone.
Very bad idea. Like, the movies are incredible. Yeah. The guy is still alive. But, like, if you had to do this now, like, it's the worst thing you could ever do.
There's absolutely no way. I mean, I don't think at that time insurance was actually, you know, like, life insurance was, like,
a thing.
I think
that's
what
he was annoyed by when he did Rush Hour. I seem to remember that it, like, that was the thing. Where he's like, oh, I can't do that just because the insurance doesn't cover it. Like, come on. I can't do that. Yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, no, maybe not. Like, but he doesn't care, right? Or he doesn't care. He's like Tom Cruise. He's there's maybe a thesis to write about Tom Cruise and Jackie Chan, two personalities who like to put themselves at risk.
Basically. Although, having said that, I think Tom Cruise, I have to say, he recently is adopting the sort of like the Jackie Chan sort of like.
Yeah,
monarchy of like, okay, he's a guy who's gonna like do his own action and his own stunts in particular. So I more so than Jackie Chan nowadays, if I dare I say.
I mean, at his age, if you compare, like, Jackie Chan doesn't do any of those things anymore because he thinks like, I can do that visually. But like, Tom Cruise doesn't stop. He really never ever ends, and it's really. I'm in awe of the guy, but like also thinking like that's probably the worst ideas, but. At the same time, to me, what is maybe I'm stupid, and please send a letter to my address if you think I'm stupid when I'm with what I'm about to say. But at least
I get a lot of that from mine.
At least he takes like the responsibility. That's his responsibility. He's a producer. He's
that
the
is
star,
true. Yeah.
And he's the only one taking the risk. Kinda.
No, that is true. And he's taking like I think. There's a difference. I think Jude Poi, who is a Hong Kong, or a former Hong Kong stuntman, he's now more of an action director these days in the UK. He says something that is actually very sort of like, he posited something that was very like, oh, okay, I could see where you're coming from, in that Hong Kong stunt people aren't, there's a difference between stuntmen and daredevils. Daredevils are people who don't necessarily, he just does the big stunts, but don't necessarily sort of like, it's only like a one and done deal. If you do it, Jackie Chan for me is like a stuntman, and his crew are like stunt people because they figure out, they are really skilled, and there's an element of guts that you have to like do these stunts, but there's also an element of like planning and, you know, and skill involved in order to actually do the stunt as safely as possible. Yeah. You're going to get bruised or battered, you know. And obviously, Jackie Chan, the big stunts is, that's his big selling point. But I'm sure they took every precaution to make that
true,
stunt as safe as possible.
The reason I think there's also that perception to me is that, well, you have the always end credits, which is on purpose to maybe even emphasize even more that the risk is real and that, like, you know, it's really dangerous. But the fact also that you have some scenes that were wrong. So, like, the infamous bus scenes in Police Story 1 where that guy fell on the wrong side of the bus. But like you said, it wasn't planned like this.
It wasn't planned like, and you know what? And when I think Jackie Chan did the right, when Jackie Chan told this story, you can easily say, "Oh, you didn't care about the stuntman." I think he did the right thing, because what happened was, when that bus stunt went wrong, he had to like keep in character and finish the shot. If he didn't, that shot would not be usable. And frankly, they would have to try and do that stunt again, which I'd rather you not do.
Oh, that's,
you
know, very, I mean, responsible. Like, yeah, absolutely.
If you, you know, a normal person would be like, try to like attend to like the stunt people, see if they're injured, because the stunt, apparently the stunt people that came flying through the from the bus were meant to land on the car and not on like concrete.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but that only happened because the brakes in those buses back in the day, they were like airbags compared to, not, they weren't like the normal brakes of like cars that you get from the UK. They were like airbags, so you don't like press down and it stops. You have to like press down a few times to sort of like,
wow,
you know, kind of like, you kind of, the bus has to go through a motion of like jerks to, in order to like slow down, and because of that, the stuntman couldn't get the right momentum of it, because you have to like sort of get the right momentum to actually throw yourself out of the bus and then push yourself with enough power to actually land on the actual car. But because of the way the bus was like sort of slowing down and sort of jerking back and forth, they couldn't sort of propel themselves in the same way, because they were like jerking back and forth in the actual bus.
Yeah.
So that's why it went wrong. But I think Jackie Chan did the right thing of actually keeping character. So once it says cut, then they can actually tend to the actual stuntmen, and then they can actually just use that particular footage.
Yeah.
Because it still works.
It does,
It's still, yeah, exactly. The shot still works, and it still elicits that same reaction that you would get if they were like landing on the car. In fact, I think it actually, in many ways, I think it actually makes it more painful, because it is essentially hard concrete that we're falling on.
Yeah, it didn't do that, of course, in Police Story 3, when Michelle Yeoh like fails to, I think, to land on the car, and instead like almost got rolled over. She went on record to say that, like, he saved my life on this occasion, because I would have definitely died on this. But then he's also the guy who organized the stunt scene, so you know, he saved my life. But then at the same time, if he didn't have the brilliant idea for that scene, it wouldn't have happened. But regardless, you're right, it's one of those cases where like, can we keep the scene, or is it usable
basically,
or not? And then like Michelle Yeoh's scene in Police Story 3, where it's like, it's definitely not usable, and I need this person to still be alive too. But at the same time, when you compare it then to Police Story 2, it then moves kind of away from that kind of action scenes.
It's more of a thriller. Yeah, it's more of a thriller. And to be honest with you, I think we spoke about this just briefly, but I really do like Police Story 2. I know it's seen as kind of a lesser film, but I think it's a lesser film in the sense that not all the elements come together in a very tight package.
No, yeah.
Whereas with the first Police Story, everything came together into like a tight package, you know, kind of thing, in terms of like story and character and the action. Whereas with the second film, the problem with the second film, I think maybe, is because that it essentially has two sets of villains. It has there's one set of villain that is basically from the first film.
Yeah.
And I think they were meant to be seen as like kind of a red herring, because you know, Jackie Chan is trying to find these terrorists, and they actually think it's the villains from the first film trying to like harass him, essentially, which they kind of do, but not in the same sense as like when we're introduced to a second set of villains who ends up being the main villains of the actual films. And I think for that reason, it kind of like, there was just too much going on in terms of like story and character, and I think that's what kind of lets it down, I think. But
scenes. Like, I've rewatched some of those scenes, and they're not as striking as the first one.
Yeah,
to be perfectly honest with you, when I before preparing this episode, I looked up a bit. I tried to remember Police Story 2 and what was happening, and I could not for the life of me remember anything from Police Story 2. The only things that came to mind were Police Story 1 and Police Story 3, which I had seen fairly recently. So Police Story 3, there was a reason. But like Police Story 3, I've seen like a few months ago, well, maybe last year, but like that's not a long time ago. And I could not remember. When I read the synopsis, then yes, of course, things came back to my mind. I was like, oh yeah, those mom people and those scenes like in the big building and but Jesus Christ, like, it's not. And because also it kind of really follows immediately from the first one.
Yeah.
It becomes a bit of a blur. Like, it feels very similar, and then when it strays away from the formula.
I kind of wish they actually focused on a new set of villains instead of trying really hard to connect with the first one. I think that's what kind of lets it down, you know, personally.
Yeah, for sure.
I think what there were, having said that, okay, so controversial opinion, perhaps, but I, as much as I do like Police Story 3 as a whole, as a package, I think it's a better film than Police Story 2. Mm. I do kind of, there were certain fight sequences in Police Story 2 I actually much prefer than in Police Story 3. That's just going, I'm just going ahead, I'm just throwing it out there. Like, the fight in the park is,
it's very choreographed.
I would probably rank that, if there was like a top 10 favorite fight scenes, favorite Jackie Chan fight scenes, I would rank that, and I would definitely put that in the top 10.
You know what? When
it's that good in my opinion.
Yeah, to me, like, I rewatched that scene, I was thinking in my head, like, oh, it's very well done. But yeah, in the context of the movie, it's not, it's not that visually interesting. It's just that when you start thinking about how it's done, it's a very, very good piece.
Well, yeah, it's a very good piece in isolation. I think as a piece where you're trying to like put it in a film, and it's kind of like, you, we were talking about how the story and the character has to stop for the to make way with the action. This kind of did happen, because if you look at the actual scene, it's basically Jackie Chan and Kai Kui and Mei's character trying to reconcile their relationships. And that kind of, for some reason, stops dead in its tracks, so Jackie Chan can just run off and like beat up a few goons, and he comes back. And even like Mei actually says, you know, why did you actually go and like chase them? Why can't you just stay with me? And he's right. And you kind of, you think about it, she's right. You know, why
yeah,
did
exactly.
you stay with
why?
Mei? Because she's like, you left her on her own. Do you know what
that,
I mean?
Again,
you know?
Jackie Chan is, and well, Kai Kui in particular, is a terrible, terrible person when it comes to. Yeah, he's a terrible boyfriend. It's a wonder why he's even got a girlfriend, because you're not doing anything. Like, you, like, what are you doing? You're just... But I guess it's, you see the fascination with him as a person, and like dating him as in the sense like, oh, this guy is like, he has like strong morals, and he's like, an idealist, and like he does so much to save other people, which is true. All of those things are true in the context of the movies.
Yeah.
But as a person who cares for others, is that kind of disconnect between, I care for others and I save people, and at the same time, like, when this
I don't care about the people who are close to me.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if you, in general, I do like people, but like as individuals, eh, not so much. It's really a strange thing, but it is that disconnect that means that sometimes, in particular, I think in the second one, the comedy maybe works less. Like, he's, it's also a movie that takes itself a bit more seriously. I mean, the third one does itself very seriously. Like, those Scarface moments, like, Jesus Christ. Like, dude, we really need
No,
that.
That's true. I know, right?
But,
oh, well, I think that's with Stanley Tong, really. As opposed to Jackie Chan.
I really want to put some cocaine in this movie. This woman's going to die for no reason at all. But, yeah, in the second one, like, all those movie, all those moments where he has to like, fight the bombers. I was like, I watched that last scene again, and I was like, oh, okay. He fights
it is a
guy.
Very dark film.
It
like,
is.
When one of the characters actually literally explode in the, is it the embassy or the police station? It was like, wow, this is actually quite a dark film. Even for, like, Jackie Chan, he actually went there, you know, kind of thing. And normally, when that happens, it's because it's a different director. But no, it's, this is definitely a Jackie Chan film, where he's directed by him and produced by him. He very much, you know, greenlit this. So
I
was like,
guess
all right.
He wanted to do something different and make sure he didn't repeat himself, which would make sense, you know, in theory.
Yeah.
You write a script, you think like, is it the same script or is this different? Okay, we'll have to make it different. Well, in that case, yeah, you take away some of the humor. What means there's some physical comedy, but not as much. The explosions are still there. That's the trademark of the Police Story thing. And that's when kind of like it becomes more of a different film. And you said like you mentioned the fact that classic films more have like a less fun of ideas to kicker, and then that's kind of the format that goes with Police Story 2.
I know. I was very surprised at how traditional it went with the final showdown, actually, because, and to be honest with you, I think that's kind of why I warm to it more, because I guess I am somewhat of a traditionalist when it comes to my action. I'm a sucker for super kickers. You know what I mean? I love like stuff like Ken Lo in like Drunken Master 2, and like Wang Zhangli and Wang Sig from like the first Drunken Master and Young Master. I'm a big fan. If you're a great kicker, any stretch of imagination, I'm automatically a big fan. So seeing Benny Lai like kick up a storm against Jackie was like really great. But I can see why, in many ways, it's kind of like a step backwards for fans who have the first
one. It's exciting to see at the time, but when it comes to remembering things from it, I'm less. Yeah. But I gotta say one thing about that second one. Just like the first one, I do remember watching it and being in it. Oh, and like just excited from watching those movies. It's not as memorable, but like compared to like many action scenes, even John Wick movies, which are pretty cool, but like there's a rush of adrenaline you get from police story movies, which is unparalleled, unmatched. Like it's so constant and just so intense. Like they put so much effort in those movies. You look at them, you're like, ooh, I'm involved, like invested in this. And even if it wasn't that great, it wasn't as memorable, but as an experience, it was a lot of fun. Like it was still a pretty, pretty strong movie. And I still
really like it, especially Benny Lai as the
bomber.
What's the bomber, but what's the appropriate term. I'm hesitant to call him a deaf mute character, but is that an appropriate thing to say?
I see what he's deaf mute.
He's deaf mute character. I think I really like that character because he's meant to be seen as this non-threatening type, and then when he's like start pulling out the moves, it's like, oh wow, so he's like he's actually the final villain, and that's a great way to introduce a villain, because I think this is like, and it's still part of like Jackie Chan's way of actually displaying different types of characters, because normally when you have a final character, you want them to be bigger and stronger, you're not meant to make him essentially, because I think that the actor who plays the deaf mute character, he's like a couple of inches shorter. I mean, not to like take away from him, but he doesn't come across as a very opposing
threatening
villain
in terms of physical, like you'd see him in a mall, you'd be like, I can take him, and like probably not really, but less likely when you actually see him fight.
It's funny you should mention this, and this is like a bit of a trivia, but Benny Lai actually reprised this specific character in a Taiwanese kids film called Little Kids Beat the Boss, which I've actually seen somehow, and it's a stupid dumb film, and obviously the only selling point is actually Benny Lai kicking up a storm, but instead of kicking Jackie Chan, he's kicking little kids. I don't know. Kind of,
that's so much, right?
It's a stupid film, it's not meant to be. I think it's kind of a weird film, because I think Police Story 2 is such a hard, serious film, and then you try to incorporate a villain from that particular film and put it in the kids film and try to lighten up the character. It's kind of a weird turn, but I don't want
to make any comparison to this, because there's nothing that comes to mind, but like it's like I don't know, it's like King Kong versus a war criminal in the Gamera movie. It's like Gamera against this guy. whoa.
So
against Eric Kissinger fight.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what? This is like so out of left field. What's going on? But
George W. Bush.
I know you've written on your notes that you weren't taken by the villain as much as me. I really liked it.
Again, talking about it now, I do remember having a very good time watching it. And I was like, this is still top level stuff. But coming to Police Story 3, Police Story 3 rekindles all the elements I really like about Police Story 1 in terms of, the big explosions, like the action set pieces. There are many of them and they are incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, dealing with a pretty serious subject because strangely for Jackie Chan, he plays the guy that's not so keen on mainland China, which I was watching this movie thinking like, oh wow, you have to really try very hard for this one.
This is like almost a precursor to the Rush Hour films, in that Jackie Chan is kind of like a fish out of water in China. And then The Michelle Yeoh character is the one that's trying to, like, sort of, I guess, look after him or babysit him, you know, kind of thing. That's the sort of dynamic we have. I much prefer the duo of, like, Jackie Chan and Michelle Yeoh. No disrespect to Chris Tucker or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, but, you know, I mean, Michelle Yeoh was amazing. The amount of scenes in this movie, you're just... She's so good.
So fight-wise, I will actually say this. The fighting in Police Story 3, I think, like you said, they kind of, like, the explosion up the sort of, like, the scope of the... But yeah. I think in doing so, they kind of, like, didn't put that much attention to the fight choreography compared to, like, the first two films.
True,
that's
yeah.
kind of where I got out of it. I mean, there was some good stuff, but it was like... Oh, you know, you didn't get anything even at the level of, like, let's say, Police Story 2, where he fights the super kicker. It's not like that. And I think a lot of the fights, in fact, a lot of the best fighting scenes actually did involve Jackie Chan, in my opinion. It actually involved Michelle Yeoh's character when she...
Perhaps,
the,
yeah.
That first scene where she, like, jumps up and does, like, a double, like, that split kick and start, like, throwing up a storm. For me, that was the level I was looking for in, like, a fight film or a Police Story film, and it never quite recaptures that in many ways. I mean, you see bursts of it in the final reel when Michelle Yeoh does throw a few lovely shapes on the actual moving train, but I don't know, for some reason it never quite captured that level for me. Maybe that's a personal preference, and I know why, because, you know, it's hard to fight on top of a train, and I wouldn't necessarily
yeah,
do it myself. And there were definitely, like, things that were very impressive on the train.
Coming
but I think
back also
that,
to what we were talking yeah. about with the guns, this
yeah,
movie
yeah,
is
yeah.
definitely in like a guns galore movie.
Oh god, yeah, this
so
is such
many
a...
so many guns for almost
clearly...
no reason.
yeah.
Like
yeah.
that.
I mean,
that
it got
scene.
Kind of like it got quite gratuitous when they went to
after the Scarface moment, where for some
yeah.
reason we are like, oh, we are very mean guy. Oh, we're testing this drug on this woman. Like, okay, like that's I don't know if that's
and
a
then
good
she
idea.
And then she died
yeah,
and then feed it to the sharks and I was
terrible.
Like, I was like, wow,
it's like it's,
this is like
it's like a bad James Bond movie. Like when they like, oh, they want to emphasize that those guys are mean. Like, okay, I assume they were terrible people, but like. All right, I guess we needed to be reminded that they are terrible people. And then, they start, like, the guy, the general, just for no particular reasons, pits all
the
those
general.
People against each other. And, like, it's such a bad business decision. Like, if you're,
do you know what,
you're in there
do
for
you know
the money, mate, what are you doing?
Do you know what it looks like? It looked like a bunch of kids... like fighting each other, and the parent was like, you know what, sort it among yourselves, and it was like bad
exactly
idea, because they were stuck
exactly. they all have guns. And then there's this couple who are like bodyguards, this like this man and this woman, and they show up for like barely a minute, but I was like, oh
yeah,
they are so charismatic. I was like, I'd watch this like movie.
Particularly the woman, I think she was actually quite a well-known fight action star. She normally plays villains, so I was expecting her and Michelle Yeoh to sort of throw down a bit,
yeah.
but they never really did.
No,
because
it's like shotguns.
I was kind of disappointed.
It's just shotguns which is fine.
Yeah, and it's like, it's just fine. I think it was done well, but I think that wasn't the type of action I was personally looking for. But I think that's why Supercop or Police Story 3 did well overseas, particularly
yeah.
in the US market, because it was very much almost a perfect amalgamation of like the Hollywood style action and the Hong Kong style action.
I would agree, yeah. Like all the expressions you want from like an action movie, if you're from a US standpoint, is there. And all the stunt work that goes, like all the physical stuff, is in the service, all the gun scenes. Like I think they
yeah.
threw it themselves like on the floor like several times in the
yeah.
in the credits, like, and you see like they took ages to do it. And it doesn't necessarily look as amazing when you watch it, but
yeah.
like you, when you watch the credits, you're like, oh yeah, well actually it took ages to do it. Like it's really a lot of timing, but it doesn't necessarily like completely amaze you as much as all the explosions, because like, again, how do you get those permits? Like it's the forest and yet everything explodes. Did no one thought, hey, maybe we're gonna cause an incident there, like
yeah, we made yeah deforestation of like
yeah, the
of
locals
some
were
kind.
Like, are you doing what today? You're doing what? My uncle is over there. Like, is this fine? You think about this? Like,
there was some nice. There was, I have to say that there was nice a back and forth between Michelle Yeoh and Jackie Chan, where they kind of bicker, you know.
Yeah, was like, and I'm you know, sure you know, it was also kind of true on set, because from the sounds of it, Michelle Yeoh like has like appreciation for Jackie Chan, but she also calls him a misogynist. So there's like a you know, there's a balance. There's like he's terrible with women, but I do like working with him to some point. Or he did good for my career, and he's like he did save but he's a prick. Again.
Yeah, well, during the production of Police Story 3, there was actually a lot of gossip columns that actually suggested, and I think a lot of it was probably true, in that they were competing with each other stunt-wise and action-wise. You know, who can actually top each other in terms of, like, action scenes?
Sounds
and,
like the marketing departments, like...
It did, yeah. It very like. Much sound like a... Yeah, exactly. You know, it does sound like a way... It does sound like a PR thing, but I think there's an element of truth to that, because Stanley Tong has actually has already like a good relationship with Michelle Yeoh. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So because Michelle Yeoh knew Stanley Tong from the film Magnificent Warrior,
which
where he was just a stuntman.
Really, really fun. It's a very fun movie.
They kind of like basically kept in contact, and when Stanley Tong got this Police Story 3 gig, he was very much like, Michelle, you have to be in this film. I know you're retired, but come out of retirement, I put you in this film, I will make you look amazing, and you know you and I know you will actually do your best to be amazing.
Yeah,
so there was definitely I'm sure there was an element of truth there, where you know Jackie Chan was like, "Mate, Michelle, what are you trying to do?"
Jackie Chan in the previous movies are you know, he's his own man. Like, he doesn't even have a sidekick in any way. Like, his girlfriend
is
there as only being like, she doesn't even kick anything or even saves the day in any way.
Yeah.
She's always there to be the victim and being captured and kidnapped and used for threats. So like, at no point is he resolving anything by himself. So to put him, like, even the character himself, like in the movie, is like, why are you associating me with this woman? Like,
arguably,
he doesn't disagree with the fact that it's a woman. He seems to disagree with the fact that he has to do the mission with somebody else. Like, can I not save the day by myself? Like, well, not really. You have to infiltrate mainland China and the group of terrorists. I don't really think you can do that by yourself.
I love how that kind of like, there's a throwaway line at the end where it does actually talk. It does actually like mentions the handover, where it's like, oh, because they retrieved the woman, which is the gang boss's former fiance.
Which turns out, surprisingly, like, after being introduced as being this terrible person, it turns out like, oh, he really cares for his wife. He's a wife guy. Like, all of this,
all of this for this one girl. I think it's largely because she has access to assets that he wants.
The way he acts, I was like, oh, he seems to really care about his wife. Like,
yeah, no, that's why. You know, but that's the thing. I think the story was meant to be like, because she has assets, but the way Kenneth Sang, the actor who plays that character, the way he acts, he looked like he genuinely cared for him.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, kind of thing, that's why that whole part with the Scarface stuff, like, I don't know who put that in the movie, but like, I wouldn't be surprised if it was an afterthought. Like, the movie could easily be shorter, and you don't need that particular action, like that particular scene. You could even have that fight scene with the other gangs. Like, you don't need to have him being like, oh, I'm a villain, and oh, look at my associate playing Pong. And like, because they do play Pong at some point.
That's true.
For some reason. But like,
I don't know. The guy's a gamer. You know what? If I was like a super villain, like, I'd most likely be like Kenneth Sang's character. I was like, except minus the drugs, you know, I'd be like there just playing video games, essentially.
That's honestly, like, it's the wing. That's not a really good recipe to be a crime boss. Like, what's your recipe to be a crime boss? I'll just play video games all day.
That's what we do.
Those drugs are not going to deliver themselves. Like, just go out. Like, you'll play video games.
I just get Yuen Wah to do it, which, by the way, he was also great, I think, in terms of like the one with the beard.
Yeah.
Where, he was also great. And I think he was actually a former Peking Opera classmate of Jackie Chan. So he? That's why they kind of, so they definitely work well together.
He's more threatening. Like, as a guy, he had a lot more of an aura of like, oh, you're ready for anything. Like, that whole scene. Talking about like threatening scenes, like the moment where he comes back to his gang and then like starts killing one person because he betrayed him. And like, was a lot more threatening. And it doesn't seem too, like, it's not cartoonish.
What I like about his character, he's able to switch from being like being ultimately cold to being quite hearty and friendly with anyone he's actually with, particularly when Kakui's character, of Kakui. He's like, he's actually developing a nice rapport in between, and that's kind of like, that's a sign of a really good actor who could actually switch from being like, I could really be friends with him, to, oh shit, this guy kills people, maybe not. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like, that's a very,
and that makes the transition with that comedy scene where like everybody plays Kakui's relatives because they all have to pretend that he's actually who he says he is, and that was really funny. Like, it really works as a good tense essentially comedy scene the police commissioner plays his grandmother or something,
Uncle
or his
Bill.
Wife.
Uncle Bill.
Yeah, he's perfect in this. It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's really, really good comedy. Like, it's a different type of comedy because, again, it's not slapstick. Like, that's not what Jackie Chan does. But
yeah, it's very, what would you call it? Would you say it's a sort of a Carry On type comedy where he like dresses up in drag kind of thing?
Exactly,
very much. Yeah,
no, it really works. Funnily enough, I've seen another Japanese movie. Well, a Japanese movie where they have a guy trying to, as a detective, and he's trying to be part of a group of gangsters, and they also play the card of like, oh, he has to meet all the like his family to check his story, and then it's again played as I think it's called Goodwill Bastard. It's a Seiji Suzuki movie, and it's also playing for laugh, like as in like, oh well, it's a tense scene, but like, what are you gonna do? Like, everybody's pretending to be somebody they're not, so. It's the irony of the comedy of just trying to pretend to be somebody, you know. Really, really works, and that's why actually probably that whole part at the end, like that whole part actually at the middle, looks so strange, because after that, when they go back to the hotel, despite the fact that playing Kekui's girlfriend as an idiot, a complete idiot, who like doesn't understand that her boyfriend is not cheating on her and that he's on a mission, because I mean, again, those first two movies happened, you were there.
Yeah.
Do you not remember?
Yeah. Do you honestly believe that if he's gonna like leave you, it's going to be for another woman? It's going to be for his job, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think if I was the girlfriend, like, the PTSD would kick in the minute I see him. I was like, oh, I don't remember where we
Oh, God, not this again. Not this for the third damn time.
Exactly. I think a lot of American movies, that's the kind of thing. Like the mom in Home Alone movies. Like, she immediately goes into, like, oh, my God, panic mode of, like, again, this thing. Whereas, like, the girlfriend in Police Story 3, she's like, oh, what, are you cheating on me? Like, no, he's a cop, and you know that he's terrible with everything.
Yeah, it's funny. I think it's funny you should mention that, because I think if I was to find, like, an American equivalent to, like, a Police Story, I think it would be the Die Hard films.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because Bruce Willis essentially played an everyday guy trying to, like, you know, reconcile with his wife, and you could see progressively as the film's going on that the wife literally, compared to like Maggie Jones' character, the wife literally was like, I can't deal with this.
Oh,
I'm
exactly.
out.
She divorced him like super fast.
Exactly.
She divorced him, I think, after maybe the first one.
The first one,
and then
what happened to the second film? She was in the second.
She's
film,
in the
right?
second you film. Know? But that's the thing. She's in the second film. She does punch that the journalist. Bunny Bedelia. She's great in this. She's one of the highlights of the Die Hard movies, which is a thing that they didn't continue using, which is really problems. Yeah. Like, missing the point. The wife. Yeah. She's amazing.
Yeah.
Bunny Bedelia plays a fantastic counterpart because she is as badass, like in a different way, but she is a very, very strong person. And to have Maggie Cheung being so useless throughout all that series,
causing absolutely the actual problems, you know. Whereas with the first two films, she basically she was just someone that Jackie Chan has to save. But I think she definitely graduated to the point of girlfriend that actually causes more of the problems in the third film.
It's like she's 12. It's like, that's the moments where you're rolling your eyes, going like, oh, come on, like.
You know what? I'm sure Maggie Cheung was kind of rolling.
Yes, she was. Like, there's no way she was like, what am I doing in this movie? What? Like, I have learned things. Like, I can learn things. Can you not believe that, Jackie? That women can learn things. Because it is, again, those movies, if there's the destruction, the mix of comedy and martial arts, the mix of comedy and thrillers or cop stories and the martial arts, it's really the fact that Kakui just likes putting women in danger. Or if he doesn't like it, he seems to be really terrible at preventing those things from happening.
Yeah, I would say, I would like to think it's the latter, that he's actually capable of actually saving the people he's meant to be saving, essentially. He's good at catching criminals, but not necessarily saving people,
At the end, kind of when it... Also, the fact that his girlfriend being involved in the final plot is kind of just a transition. Because after that, you just you're fine. All right, I gotta catch that guy. Like,
yeah, because what happened? Yeah, because basically, Maggie Jones' character, who Maggie Jones didn't do the stunt, it was definitely another stunt person. Gets thrown out of the helicopter, and then like Jackie Chan runs to her. I was like, are you okay? And it's like, okay, get the ambulance in. I'm gonna like go chase down the villain the movie?
Yeah, exactly, the movie. You know, I'm a workaholic. Have you not understand from dating me for several years now?
We sound very negative about Police Story 3. We still really like
it. It's a lovely movie.
It's a great film.
It's just hard to overlook the fact that he's awful.
He's like a terrible boyfriend. Like, Kakui is like a really, really terrible boyfriend, if you think about it.
Yeah, because it's a movie, it's really hilarious. But it's like, if it was in real life, I'd be like, you just dump her. Dump him. Like, what are you doing?
Dump him, yeah. What are you doing, man? It's not worth it.
She's not like, she's worth much more than what you're doing. Just stop, stop doing that. Because after that, they go into such extremes to stop everything. It's really incredible. And it's not one of those American movies where you have to stop the bomb from destroying the whole city. I think it's just them getting money. And it's like, it's like, I was reading a Batman comics recently, like the Joker Wars comic, and like all the cops are still fighting the Joker goons. And I'm like, and then I think one of the characters goes like, Bullock goes like, as a line saying like, oh, you have to deserve your paycheck. And I'm like, what paycheck you talking about? They're gonna die. No paycheck is worth what they're doing. It's not like, it's the same thing for henchmen in movies, and same thing for Jackie Chan and Kakui in those movies. What are you being paid for?
Well, what are you doing? And the thing is, if you think about it, if throughout the films, the police, even the police that he's actually worked for, has kind of resented his presence. Yes. Because remember where there was like, the first week he saved the day, he caught the criminal. But in the very beginning of Police Story 2, he gets like an earful of like, oh, I can't believe you did all that. You destroyed a building just to catch this one criminal. I mean, you did a good job, but you basically, like, the amount of property damage that we have to pay for is just ridiculous. Again, so we're going to like demote you.
Again, to quote Hot Fuzz, you're making us all look bad.
Exactly.
It's essentially what is happening. He's
Oh god, yeah, you're right. You're actually
it's
right.
It's the same
plot
as Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, it's the same
you're right. Exactly that. Like, I'm sure they watched those first three movies and they went like, what if you have a super cop, but nobody can stand him because he's too good at his job and creates problems wherever he goes. which is it's true. It's essentially that. It's like when you see your problem and you see every problem as a nail because you're a hammer, then that creates like a series of issues greater than what the problem you're trying to solve. And it's kind of that's why they have to up the ante every time in all those post-story movies, because you have to justify him still doing and risking his life for something that is a great threat, so that the audience can go along and go like, well, actually, you know, it's sure that guy stole a pack of M&Ms, but it was worth stopping that car for, you know.
Yeah.
Except it's
still a great film.
Still a great film. And incredible fight, like action scenes at the end, like helicopter stuff, like that's just
like the pyrotechnics and the sort of like the scope of the final reel, hands down amazing.
Stuff by Michelle Yeoh on the bus is incredible. It's one of those, again, like the amount of adrenaline that goes into your body when you watch that part of the scene, it's massive. You just look at this
still. No, because she was like, basically, she was actually, that bike was on a wire, so she can actually sort of land on the moving train.
Oh, but if you think about safe.
Because if you swing like a bike, a motorbike is like really fucking heavy, and if you're on it, it's even heavier. Swinging that onto a moving fucking train and landing safely is how can you actually do that? Like, you know, you can see in the outtakes that they had to take a good few takes to actually get that down, because the amount of precision that he has to like that requires to actually pull off that stunt is ridiculous.
No, and it's like, wonder Michelle Yeoh now plays in the Kenneth Branagh and again like against Hercule Poirot, because it's like, yeah, that's more relaxing. Like, that's a good one.
I just want to like sit around and talk.
Exactly.
No more of this
stunt
bullshit.
It was fun. I did enough stories. Again, like the amount of like war stories they have to share with her husband, who used to be a race car driver. The amount of time, like, do you remember the time I was like, oh yeah, let me tell you about the time I always died too. And like, there's a new story every day, because it's just complete nonsense. And Police Story 3 is one of those movies that really encapsulates all the danger that those people put themselves in. Sure, there is a lot of planning. Sure, they are not dead.
You're right.
You gotta look at this and go like, come on, like
the amount of guts that has.
I mean, do you understand? I mean, Police Story 3, isn't that the movie where she also broke her leg just because she missed the jump for one of the stunts? Again.
Yeah, actually, you know what? Come to the end. Everyone talks about the bike stunt. I'm actually kind of more impressed by the fact that she was hanging on a speeding van, you know, like, do you know what I mean? Like, she was literally, you look at this, she was, her body was literally flinging from left to right, you know, and it's like, she could have easily died, like, at the very least.
Isn't
in the bike
stunt, she almost died? Like, isn't that scene where she almost died because she
slipped? It was definitely close to that scene. Because it's still the same scene.
Saying, like, I almost got run over by Jackie Chan's car, basically. Yeah, and he just at the last minute just, like,
grab her. Yeah, exactly. You know, and to sort of break her fall, if you think.
Exactly.
About it,
and then they immediately stopped shooting and, like, all rushed towards her because they are like, this is not good. And, like, yeah, she was fine. She's still probably continued the movie, like she talked about it in the way
it'd be fine.
Yeah, exactly, she talked about it, like, and she talks about it in the extras for Yes Madam. There's an interview with her where, like, post her coming out of retirement, and she talks about Police Story 3, and yeah, like, she mentioned particularly that those scenes as being like stuff that she could have almost died. Those scenes, when you watch them, you're like, yeah, there's some real danger in there, and but they are incredible cinema. Like, again, that's the thing with Tom Cruise.
I mean,
the power of cinema. That's what he cares about. And
just do it once, and it's there forever.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Tom Cruise did it 15 times with that bike stunt, like in the last one. So but again, he's doing it by himself. So
yeah, yeah, and he also has like a crew. fine. Yeah. I mean, there's that particular. Are you talking about the stunt that from the latest film? Okay, so yeah, because I think there was like a behind the scenes where they did go through like a whole lot of planning. I mean, this is not to take away from like Tom Cruise, because he still did an amazing job, and yeah, that took a lot of guts to even just do that. Whereas in Hong Kong, they do go through planning, but because of like a much more tighter budget, and you know, their scope they can't compete with Hollywood in terms of like planning and procedures and like safety measures. So they put as much planning as possible, but still, it's kind of like they have to pretty much do it in the span of a week. Whereas I think with Tom Cruise's stunt, I think they did it for like they actually had to go through like a number of months before they could actually sort of like greenlit
that. But yeah. Ultimately, Police Story 3 is just an incredible movie when you watch it for all the stunts and all the action. And like, all in all, it's just one of those incredible...
And a very tight package. It's a, like I said, you know, it's like compared to like Police Story 2, as much as I... There are definitely elements about Police Story 2 I like better than Police Story 3, but as a package as a whole, it's a tighter package. It's a more focused story. Yeah. It's actually a more focused story if you think about it as well. So yeah.
So you're saying you are in agreement that it's the top three is Police Story 1, Police Story 3, and Police Story 2. The difference that Police Story 2 I would put really underneath, but again, it's because
I know why it's not as high. Having said that,
that's the difference. You enjoy it a lot more.
It's funny because I did take a look at the three films, and in this occasion, I enjoyed Police Story 2 a little bit more than Police Story 3. It definitely, like, Police Story 1 will always be my favorite, but Police Story 3 and Police Story 2, which one will I enjoy more? Really depends on the day, because there are definitely things about Police Story 2 I enjoy more than in Police Story 3. But I think that's a lot of it comes down to personal preferences.
Yeah, for
that
sure.
I look for more the fight action stuff. I gravitate towards it as opposed to the more stunt oriented stuff, really. Whereas with Police Story 3, it's more about the scope of the stunt oriented. There's still some really cool fights in it, but it's not enough for me to be like, oh, I wish that I always find myself, I wish there was actually more, you know, despite everything, you know. So I would, but at the moment, yes, objectively speaking, having said that, Police Story 3 and Police Story 1 are a much more tighter package than Police Story 2. So in a way, if I was to be very objective, I'm trying to be.
I don't think there's any such thing as being objective when you have to judge, a top three. Like, that's the point. That's not
the
point.
You're right, yeah, but at the moment, I'm inclined to agree with you that one goes to the top, number three goes to number two, and number two goes to number three. But I wouldn't say it would be like way behind number three. As you,
we'll talk about it tomorrow again, and then we'll reshoot that whole episode.
Yeah, Police Story 2 is number two, guys, or number one. I love the super kicker.
That deserves to be on the t-shirts. I love super kicks.
I love super kickers.
Rock hard for super kickers.
Oh, shut up. Shit. Oh, that's gonna follow me for the rest of this damn podcast, isn't it?
Maybe just this episode.
Just this episode. Well, we shall see. Yeah. But we did it. We made it. We talked about all three films
in an hour and a half, which is not bad.
In an hour? Wow. Not. That's pretty good.
That's impressive. I mean, that goes in the top, like number four in the top three, like easy. Like, what's best? Like the podcast of all those things. Yeah. It's up there, up there with the gods.
Up there with the gods,
but
indeed.
But if you've not seen Police Story 1 and 2 and 3, they're all available via Eureka in Blu-ray.
Yeah, which I have. And they're actually 4K if you're so inclined.
Yeah, so it's really worth it. Crime Story is also available. I don't remember. It's also Eureka. I do know it's 88 films.
Crime Story is a bit of a weird one because it's actually not part of the Police Story franchise,
but it
was sold as a Police Story. I think
was it?
Because at the time, yeah, it was actually, I think it was in Japan where it was actually sold as a Police Story film, because I think Was it considered Police Story Evil 4 or 5? Because I don't know if it came after before First Strike.
I never heard of it as being a... For me, it was separate, just because of the tone.
You know,
it's such a darker movie.
Yeah, it's totally separate, but I think because it's Jackie Chan and it's kind of like, it's all about police. I think it was just a way to sort of sell the film to like an established audience.
It's definitely a very different beast. But really good. Really, really good. I think... Funny enough, just rounded up on Jackie Chan, like he's one of those guys that's so popular that I think probably most of his movies are available pretty easily on Blu-rays or DVDs.
Yeah.
Like,
can we talk about because we probably will never like talk about the sequels?
So
I think you may have or may not. Okay, so there was Police Story 4, but it was sold internationally as First Strike,
right?
It's not a reboot, it very much posits itself as a fourth Police Story film, but honestly there's so little in common with the first three. Is you might as well consider it its own thing. It's the film with where he fights with a ladder. That's why Police Story 4, and he fights a shark, which I'm
Jesus.
I know, right? Not necessarily my favorite. It's kind of a fun film for what it is, but I think it definitely pales in comparison with the first three films. Oh, as I mentioned, there was the spin-off with the Michelle Yeoh character with Project S. That's still related,
probably,
I think.
Fun.
You know what? I really like it.
Okay.
I think you would like it as well. It's a lot more serious film. I think largely because of the character, because I don't think she's seen as a sort of a comedic character.
No,
she's like the straight man.
Completely.
She's like the straight
exactly,
man to the shenanigans of Jackie Chan.
Yeah, Jackie
character.
Chan is really incompetent in Police Story 3. He's so many.
Yeah, funny. Oddly enough, he is actually more so than the first two films. But anyway, and then there was. Well, obviously we can mention Crime Story, but I think they retroactively made it. Then there was New Police Story, directed by Benny Chan, and that was in 2004.
Okay,
I think
Benny Chan,
and he
I would imagine
yeah
solid.
Benny Chan yeah Benny and you know what, very solid entry. He plays a different Jackie Chan plays a different character though, which I'm like, okay, interesting, hence the fact that it's called New. But I think we might actually talk about that one day.
Okay.
I think, because I think it's a good film to talk about it in a subsequent episode. But I actually I like it more in subsequent viewings. There are definitely things about it that's a bit kind of this. He definitely wants to demonstrate. Jackie Chan wanted to demonstrate more as a dramatic actor as opposed to a police as an action actor. But if that's the case, don't call it a Police Story film, because I think that's where it kind of
that's not the point of Police Story movies, really.
Exactly.
With
yeah.
different titles, probably more fine.
Yeah. Then there was another Police Story film, but you know, again, like a totally different character. It called Police Story 2013, but I think it was released as Police Story Lockdown. And I haven't seen it, but apparently it's so far away from the Police Story films that you might want you got ask yourself why do they call it Police Story, other than the fact that it starred Jackie Chan.
Again, it's
so,
the name
yeah.
recognition of the franchise is that strong. Like, that's the simple fact is that you're talking about a Police Story movie. Like, even if you say it's not is very detached, I'd still like to see it just because it's a Police Story movie.
Well, okay. Well, this next film, you may have to ask yourself that question, because you may be testing your patience here. There's another film called Bleeding Steel, which I heard was not very good. But the only reason I actually included that in the list, because Jackie Chan sang the theme tune for that film, and that theme tune is actually essentially a remixed version of the theme tune from the very first film. And the fact that he decided to use that for Bleeding Steel basically suggests that this is still a Police Story film and that's tangentially related. And I'm like, oh, come on, Jack.
That is terrible. It's really useless. Unlike, for example, when we talk about Eastern Condors, that like group singing of like that was great. That is great.
Oh yeah, that's what I would like. I would rather have that than, you know, Jackie Chan retroactively making a Police Story film simply because he sang the same exact
that
theme tune as the one. And it's like I don't know if you heard of the film Bleeding Steel, but I heard Not so great. Okay, films. In fact, I watched the trailer and it looked it didn't look great.
But they're doing another one.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, I've seen that it was in production. Like, there was a new police story movie with Jackie Chan being in production, yeah.
Hang on. I kind of wish they'd leave it alone, but...
Yeah, I don't think they will.
I'm not saying this to, like, take away from Jackie Chan.
He's in development.
New police story
2025, too. Apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's going to, like, follow the character from the...
Nicolas Say is the director attached to it. After his release from prison, Jo Kwan wants retribution and used the media to degrade the police. Retribution of Inspector Chen Xufeng and Chief Superintendent Chang Po Kwang. Will the policeman overcome the chaos? That sounds completely separate from...
Yeah. If a new police story, it was completely separate because Jackie Chan's not playing Kai Kui, he's playing another character called Tan Gotwing. But Nicolas Say actually doing the directing duties, that's interesting. I think that because he's normally an actor, he's the lead in Time and Tide, basically.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So he's decent.
He's decent. Pretty... In fact, there's actually another film directed by...
And that's his director debut.
Sorry?
That will be his director debut.
Yeah, exactly. But there's another film, which I would consider more of a police story film than some of the official police stories, called Invisible Target. And it actually starred Nicolas Say... Actually, Jackie Chan's son, JC Chan, and there was another actor, Sean Yu. And that film was directed by Benny Chan. It's a 2007 film, and very much, I would say, is, in terms of contemporary films, it's probably the best police story type film of recent years, in my opinion. I highly recommend checking it out. Maybe we might even talk about it in like a subsequent episode. So, Yeah, there have been more police story films subsequent from the original trilogy, but I think actually kind of similar to the Die Hard films. It's like anything that passes three, it's kind of like, it's a bit wishy-washy, you know, in terms of quality. You know?
Nothing can beat Fast and Furious movies where after the first three, you're like, everything's still fine. Is this still stupid, but it still works?
I've kind of stopped following Fast and Furious after 8. I was kind of let down by 8, but I heard 9 was not so great, and 10 is just absolutely, like, bonkers.
It's fun. Like, those movies are comedies. Like, there is nothing else to say about those. Aside from, like, Vin Diesel is, like, driving cars that make things that shouldn't happen. Like, they're defying science and God and in cars on the power of family and having static shot of a young woman's asses, and that is essentially what those Fast and Furious movies are now. It's a formula.
Hey, those films are doing gangbusters in China.
They are doing gangbusters. Yeah, what a surprise. What a surprise.
China loves those films.
Yeah, of course they do. But I must admit, they're really, really enjoyable for where they are. Like, I do give them a pass for just being silly popcorn movies. Like, I wouldn't give them any more credits than that. But every time it's fun time.
Yeah. Well, on that...
But I could live without them.
On that note, thank you, everyone. Anything you want to plug?
No, not at all. We do have an Instagram account.
Yeah.
So Hong Kong Gore podcast. So we'll put a link in the description of the episode. So do definitely check it out. We'll be posting updates on there. There's not that many people at the moment following. So I've posted on it for a bit, but I'll definitely do a lot more of it. So it's oncongo.podcast. You can find us on Instagram.
Yeah.
We are both on Sky Blue. Blue Sky, sorry.
Thank you for inviting
me. We're both
on
Blue Sky. Exactly. So we're both on that. So if you want to join the cool kids, definitely join the cool kids on Blue Sky. It's the new in thing to do. Yeah. So there's no Elon Musk.
I had a Twitter for like how many years, but I barely post on that. So I should really, like, oh, you know what? I'm starting a new account, please, guy. I should really change that, you know. Just keep on posting shit, you know, even so, like the most random things.
My handle on Blue Sky is Ororo, so Hororo.
Hmm. And my
handle
is, I literally forgot because I haven't been accessing it that much. I'm sure it's BB Who or Bronze Bot or Bronze Lamb. It's even one of those three. Why did I not prepare? We'll put it on the notes, on the show notes, and please, you know, add me. I will be accessing a lot more, and I will remember it in like subsequent episodes, I promise. So yeah.
But in the meantime, stay safe.
Yeah.
Have a good one. And tell us if you like the episode or not, and have a good one.
Yeah. Ciao.